these three things govern business life, at least, and I think interpersonal life as well. People want what they can't have, chase that which moves away from them, and value what they pay for.
Unconventional Life, the show where I interview successful entrepreneurs, artists, creators, and thought leaders on how they earn their living in non-traditional ways. Twice a week, we will explore how they took the path less traveled, what their revenue model looks like, and why they are prioritizing their passion over their paycheck. I'm your host, Joel Schroeder.
Are you ready to take your life and business to the next level? How about on a private island just off the coast in Madagascar in 2 months? Yes, you heard that right. This December 1st through the 5th, we are bringing together a group of 55 for the next Unconventional Life event. If there is something inside of you that you feel like you've been incubating, a big idea, a business, a desire for more, this is your golden opportunity, the chance to really put into action that knowing you feel and really have it start actualizing today. So imagine this, speedboating to private islands, flying you in via helicopter, and being around people that not only lift you up, but that in one conversation can transform everything. Head over to unconventionallifeshow.com/Madagascar. Get to know what all this excitement and buzz is all about. Go ahead and fill out your application and we'll see you there.
Unconventional Life, welcome. This is your host, Joel Schroeder, tuning in today from Boulder, Colorado. Today's guest is joining us from Encinitas, California. We have got Oren Claff in the house. Oren, are you ready to take us down the path less traveled?
I only think I'm ready. I don't know if I'm actually ready.
we'll explore that as we get in, everyone. And for those of you that don't know Oren, he is one of the world's leading experts on sales, raising capital, negotiation. He also has a passion for motorcycles in his spare time. And he wrote his first book, Pitch Anything, which has become a required reading throughout Silicon Valley, selling over 1 million copies worldwide. And recently, I know you also just published a new book called Flip the Script, Getting People to Think Your Idea is Their Idea, which I'm excited to talk about as well. But you are an author, keynote speaker, investment banker, written for Harvard Business Review, entrepreneur, all the things. But more than that, I love your attitude towards life, and it seems like you really get after it. And so I'm excited to, you know, peel back the curtains a little bit and kind of get more into your world a little bit. But fill in any gaps I might have left out. Welcome to the show, and give us a glimpse into your personal life.
Yeah, well, I think I'm older than everyone, so, but I finally have things organized. I have a little boy, you know, I'm an old guy with this little kid, so usually they're in Malibu and they're movie stars, but it's just me. I got a five-year-old, he's a hockey player, and that's my life. My, you know, changed everything. It's just like any romantic comedy you've ever seen is 100% factually correct once they have a kid. You come out in the middle of the night, you step on a robot, the robot spikes something in your foot. You start bleeding. You fall over. You scream. You set off the alarm. The police come. The fire sprinklers go off. Your wife leaves you, and you're in divorce court because of the robot. Anyway, no. I have a little boy. We live in Encinitas by the beach, and my passion is motorcycles. I've owned 1,000 motorcycles in the last years. I've got the cars that I've had posters of when I was a college kid on the wall. And so my friends, you know, around me are extreme athletes. I'm an athlete. So it's, you know, and I have this business that really works. So, you know, I didn't need $1 billion. Originally, if you asked me, you know, 20 years ago, rewind, what do you need, Oren? What's life about? Well, Jules, it's about having $100 million in the bank and being a billionaire. That's the only thing that matters. But, you know, what I find most people listening and most people, they need $500,000 more than they need $50 million, right? So I'm now working with an entrepreneur and we're trying to raise $1 billion for sort of a mini giving pledge to give away. What we find is people overshoot their goals. They're like, oh my God, I have $150 million. There's no way to spend it. So, yeah, I think what I try to do is make the the lifestyle though that makes me happy. Everybody makes something, does something different, meet the actual, you know, revenue and income that I have and not overshoot. You see people work their whole life to be 60 years old. I go to their birthday parties. There's like the valet, the guy they play poker with, right? And their sister's new boyfriend are there at their 60th birthday party, right? Like, really? Nobody else in your life wanted to come to your 60th birthday party, right? Well, great, you have $250 million. So you got to be careful not to overshoot your goals. And now he's got to give $150 million away because he can't use it. Like, how many Rolls Royces and mansions? And, you know, the guy has 7 mansions, 3 Rolls Royces. Like, there's nothing else to spend the money on, so he has to give it away. So you can overshoot your dreams by $200 million. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm not sure if that helped you or not.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. And I imagine to some degree, and I'm curious to kind of like be a fly on the wall and get some glimmers of how you became the man talking to us in this moment. But, you know, inside of that, I imagine it's taken some degree of self-awareness to be able to actually look at or critically ask, like, what do I really need? Versus like, when I get to X in 10 years, then I can do Y. Then I can like jump through all these hoops around and up the mountain and over the river just to actually get to what I want versus actually just going for the thing. And so, yeah, curious if you have any perspective or even a way you reflect in yourself or even the way you've built some of those capacities just for our listeners of how to really just go for the thing.
Well, I think for me is the dumb parable of the guy on the beach in the Virgin Islands. I won't say the Bahamas because there's no Bahamas left. The Virgin Islands. And, you know, the investment banker from New York goes there on vacation. And the guy's sitting there fishing, you know, on the beach and relaxing. He says, hey, look, don't you realize, right, that you could I could give you some money and you could buy some boats, right? And you could go out in there and fish and sell the fish at market and we could expand the fleet and eventually have 20 or 30 boats. I have a real enterprise. You know, if you work really hard for 20, 25 years, we'll be able to sell the company and be able to retire and go to the beach anytime you want and fish in a relaxing way. You know, of course, the guy goes, well, that's what I'm doing now, right? So I live in Southern California. We live at the beach in Encinitas. You know, like I said, I have a little boy. We have, you know, we have everything we need. You know, what are the important things to work on? And I guess the introspection is show up, do everything I can along the plan that I have, end the day with poise and grace, and get to do the things that I value, which are family and athletics, and go to bed with me is my personality, knowing I left everything on the field. I can go to bed tonight and I don't have to think about anything else. I did everything I could. And that's where I ended up. Poise, grace, did everything I could. And I'm still nailing down family, athletics. I write every night. I try and write my boy a little note about what he did today, what we did as a family. You know, I take, cause it's so easy. You take a photo, print it, write a little note under it, and we have these just stacks. And my wife wants me to put them in a book, you know, like write them in a book sequentially, cause we have stacks and stacks of random notes all over the place about his life. And so that for me is fulfillment. So I think to answer your question, I have a unique perspective because of my work. I work with guys who have $10 million, $8 million, $100 million, $1 billion, they run $750 million companies, and I get to see where having $100 million gets you. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like no further along than living in Boulder, Colorado, and being a coffee barista and having a family and hiking and, you know, writing a journal and keeping in touch with your family and travel. Like the yachts and the rappers and the Rolls Royces and it doesn't really add anything at the end of the day. I lived in the Hollywood Hills in the house that Maroon 5 moved out of. Twin Viking refrigerators, twin spiral staircases, view of the Hollywood Hills. And I've lived in, you know, tiny little houses in West Hollywood that are, you know, ready to fall down. And after 20 minutes, you don't know the difference. It's that's not. So you could probably throw out all your goals and reset them to things that are more, I don't want to use the word meaningful because meaning is different for everybody. But if you just say, I want Although I would, the only exclusion I would have is a jet. Right? The jet makes a difference. That's what I would say, because you can get to places, right, more easily. It costs you $80,000 to get, you know, from LA to Santa Barbara, but you get there quickly. No, I got lots of jet stories for you. But when I mean, we've been living in the same crappy house in Encinitas, but it's near the beach for 8 years. And we've all, you know, every year I go, I'm going to move. But to where? Right? I can't get any much closer to the beach. It takes us 2 minutes to get everywhere. Behind us is the botanical gardens. You know, and we, in the morning, we open the door. It's a safe neighborhood. It's on a cul-de-sac. It's kind of a crappy house. Like, because most of the people who have a book like mine or, you know, are on the internet or on Instagram, you know, you get to see their mansion, you know, and I don't live in that kind of mansion that photogenic. Like, the film crews want to record me. I'm like, not my house. it's not that. It's just doesn't meet the definition of mansion, but we can't leave it because we're happy.
Yeah. Which, yeah, so good. We can't leave it because we're happy and what that actually takes. And I'm curious, you know, if we go back in time, Oren, and we were to be a fly on the wall, you know, like, even if you're like your son, you know, I'm sure he'll ask you at some point, like, daddy, like, how did this happen? You know, like, how did you get here? If we were to be a fly on the wall and see some snapshots along the way to the person that you have become, like, what would we see? You know, what would have been some of those moments that really built either your character, but also even, you know, these ideas, the books, like all of those pieces?
Yeah. I can tell you sort of the transformative moment that brought me into the world, the world of Pitch Anything and Flip the Script and, you know, helping companies sell themselves and, you know, millions of dollars and dealing with venture capital and all that. A friend of mine brought me into his business. I'm not sure I was struggling, but he had a business that was booming and we were working on a deal. And he
How old were you at the time? Which is roughly
mid-30s.
Mid-30s. Okay, cool. Mid-30s. Yeah. Got it.
Mm-hmm. He brought me into a deal and he would find the deal and, you know, put the whole thing together. And then I would go out and find the investors, the money to come into the deal. And we had an investor that was just flummoxing me. Like, they were saying, yeah, we're in, but they're asking tons of questions. And, you know, everybody has those kinds of potential clients. Says, yeah, yeah, totally, we're in, but, you know, fetch me another rock. We want to see another spreadsheet. We want to see the pricing tightened up, sharpen your pencil a little bit. We want a reference and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So finally I said, I'll just call him, you know, John. John, you know, I sent over an email. And then he started talking to them, and they were doing the same thing to him. And he sends one email, three words, all caps, in the subject line as a reply to all these requests for more stuff. Lose my number. And this is like $1 million ticket that my commission is based on it, which is, you know, everything about getting a car and moving a house and then having a vacation and having my mom fly in and seeing that I have a real life. And, you know, all this stuff is tied up in this deal. As deal makers, you know, that's how they live. Mm-hmm. Lose my number. I go, oh my God, this is like all my dreams crumbling on these three words. And I just sort of hold my head. And then at this point I was on, you know, it wasn't Gmail. It was on Microsoft Mail. You know, go bing, right? Another mail comes in. Oh, so sorry, John, you know, no problem. We'll sign all the contracts, send it over. We're in, sorry to bother you. And then my world tilted. I'm like, how did, in my estimation, the rudest, most deal is over email ever come through? And then it flipped into, we're in, sorry. And I realized there was a dimension of space and time and business that I wasn't aware of. And that's what brought me into this world where, yeah. and ultimately, if you've read Pitch Anything, where I ended up is these three things govern business life, at least. And I think interpersonal life as well. People want what they can't have. People choose that which moves, people chase, you know, that which moves away from them. And people only value that which they pay for. People want what they can't have, chase that which moves away from them, and value what they pay for. And as I started coding my whole life to that, everything got better and better. So that's one inflection point of how I got into this whole universe. And now, so now you roll the clock forward, you know, 15 years or whatever, and I will just tell a potential client or someone to work with, hey, listen, sorry, I confused you. Jules, in order to work with me, you have to take actual money out of your account and put it in my account. That's how we work. We don't have another way of doing this. Is that more helpful? So when you anchor to values, you can say the most direct things because they're accurate. They're not gambits or tactics. And so that's what I learned is, and if you read Flip the Script, it's really about when you're selling or trying to, you know, close a deal, which everybody is, no matter how socially conscious, environmentally conscious, you know, we have more, you know, hippies here in Encinitas than you can assemble in Santa Cruz, or, you know, other parts of the world, you know, namaste. you know, it's like we have the hardest core CrossFit classes. I'm in CrossFit, you know, with like world competitive athletes, you know, the end of CrossFit classes. We're like, we're not going to do Shavasana, you know. Anyway.
I CrossFit and yoga as well, by the way. I was there this morning for your religious.
Yeah. So, you know, this, as you, you know, get into this world, when somebody detects that you are just adapting to who they need you to be, right? You're nice because they're putting pressure on you. You're discounting because they're asking you to discount. You're trial closing, you know, sweetly because you don't want to offend them. And you don't seem to have values. That really upsets them more than if you just say no. Mm-hmm. I understand if somebody asks for a discount and you just say no, you could upset them. But if they can see where the no comes from, which is for me, it's no because I can't spend time with this because I'm going to miss time with my little boy. I'm going to miss a hockey game or a soccer game or we just started surfing. I'm going to miss time with my wife. I'm going to miss time working out myself. I'm going to miss time with my friends to mess around with you. So it's a no. When it comes from somewhere, it has meaning.
Yeah.
When it comes from, I want more money, you know, or I'm negotiating, my sales manager told me we don't have discounts, it's confusing. So that's why you got to, when somebody else can see that you are a whole person with a set of values, wrong or right, that you stick to and are unswayable, that becomes compelling. And that's what makes you charismatic. Mm-hmm. Not the jokes you tell or, you know, most people think, oh, you're from Boulder. Yeah. You know, I love Boulder. You know, we go skiing in Breckenridge every year and then, you know, Heber to Aspen and altitude, you know, it's, and we've always been wanting to get to Boulder. And actually one of our family friends is at the university there. And maybe we'll see you sometime. That doesn't make you charismatic. That doesn't make you likable. That is, you know, Jewish geography. Right? So anyway, I'm not sure I'm answering the question, but.
Yeah. So like taking this line of, you know, questioning further, like let's say someone, you know, comes to you, Oren, and I'll even take a personal example. So I'm starting up a CBD sparkling water company. So kind of an alternate to alcohol, but that's got a lot of benefits. And actually was a sponsored snowboarder. So I've dealt with a lot of concussions, brain inflammation. Yeah. Awesome. So there's kind of my why on the CBD thing. So let's say I come to you or even one of our listeners is like, all right, I've got this idea. You know, I'm going to be, you know, bringing it out to X, Y, and Z. Like walk us through on the court using these principles, like a really effective way to get that out there. And we can just kind of try it on real time example.
Here's what happens with people like you trying to plug into the finance infrastructure. Mm-hmm. Is your creative, you're out of the box thinking. That's how you aren't, you know, plugging into society's values without being introspective about them, about, you know, having a community of people or socially, right? And then you bring all of that drama to the deal, right? When that drama needs to be compacted, people love to see that. The passion, the thoughtfulness, the conscious awareness, the community. But that has to be subcompacted to a layer. The rest of it has to look like a company. Mm-hmm. A money-making, hard-driving, decision-making, well-organized, KPIs, goals, metrics, objectives, missions. Because everybody sees Tom's toothpaste, Tom's, you know, shoes, and they just go, oh, we're going to give 10% to starving kids in Africa, right? That's not a company. That is a marketing tactic, all right? So you got to take all your passion and everything, and that people want to see that as the driver. But to pitch that deal, right? You need to a clear understanding. How are things changing today in buying behavior for a market that we can access? What are our cost of acquiring a customer? What are our KPIs? What does our financial model look like? What does our organization look like? How are we going to market? How are we measuring? What regulatory rules are we skirting? What regulations are we under? What geographies can we sell into because it's CBD? How are we going to get our technology done? Who's our technical founder? You know, again, what's the model look like? And if all of that looks like the last 20 CBD companies that actually made it and are commercial, then you're good. Mm-hmm. If you're using your creative vision and your ideas and your social consciousness to sort of do a new kind of org chart, mm-hmm. a new kind of financial model or no financial model, a new kind of a business model, a new kind of pricing model, a new kind of assumptions, new KPIs I've never seen before, that's where people get killed. So everything you have has got to be compressed into the product and mission layer, and everything below it has to look like, and I, you know, I don't even mean, but like a 7-Eleven on the corner of Wilshire and La Cienega Boulevard. Same, everything. Does that make sense?
Totally makes sense. And you know, in
line, it freaks people out to see everything new, right? They love the new idea, but everything else, like the newer, the one idea has to be the more old school and last 20 years, it's been done this way. Everything else has to be.
Yeah. Well, and I think in a lot of ways, it's like taking the conventional, you know, bringing the conventional inside of the unconventional, which is a lot of the essence of this conversation. And for our listeners, you know, and I know that's a lot of really good tips on how to kind of do that. Like there's so many, you know, I read emails that are like, Jules, I just have got this vision and I want to do this thing. Like you said, right? The passion, right? You got to condense it into that layer. But if you could go right, like to a direct, you know, even call it an elevator pitch of an idea, right? Of like so many times, how do I cut to it? Is there a formula or even a way you could offer of like I imagine you might.
Because, you know, vision and ideas, you know, that, whatever you want to say, that and a dollar will get you a subway ticket. I mean, just ideas are the commodity. So people come with an idea and they wanted an NDA. They don't want to tell anybody about it, right? In my early career, when I went into venture capital to raise money, I go, hey, I need an NDA. And they go, listen, dummy, let me help you out. If your idea is so dumb and easy to copy that you can tell it to me and then I can go do it, it's not a valuable idea. Okay, it's all execution. Right. I mean, look at this guy, Tom Ballou. He's all over the, you know, Instagram and the internet and everything. And he did Quest bars. These are like, you know, protein bars. That I love them because you can put them in the side thing of your truck, eat half of it, come back 3 months later, pick it up and still eat it. And it's like in the exact same condition. So thanks, Tom. Great, socially conscious innovation. Anyway, so yeah, the advice. And you're so young, you might not remember, but theaters, you used to go to a theater and you'd sit in a seat and Orenclaff would come and sit in front of you, 5'9". And you'd be like, I can't fucking see anything, right? Not Manute Bol, 7'3", basketball player. Like anybody, a midget comes sit in front of you like, excuse me, sir, can't see past your fucking head, right? He's like, hey, I'm a midget. What do you want from me? I'm like, yeah, these are. So theaters used to be built flat. Is what I was saying, right? Then they introduced stadium seating. That was the change. Not the stadium seating you go to with the reclining seat and they serve you a beer and some sushi. Just regular old shitty plastic seats that are higher than this. The seat in front of it is lower than the seat behind it. Stadium seating. But that wiped out every form of theater before it. So if you had a regular theater and you were doing well and your family had theaters and then stadium seating was coming to your area, it was winter is coming, right? And if you had those, I would come to you and say, listen, I'm a, you know, theater consultant. There's been some permits pulled in your area for the new stadium seating. These completely wipe out every other form of theater. You have 6 months before your business is going from hero to zero. All right. I'm super busy, but I'm willing to help you navigate this nuclear winter. And so unless there's a perception that there's a massive change that nobody's going to get out of the way of, it's hard to sell a concept, right? Now, some people have done it. Like, you know, what's changing in shoes in terms of Tom's Shoes, right? Nothing, but they executed, right? They started small and they sold some shoes and came up with a brand and, you know, so that's, but if you're just coming in and going, hey, I want some money for this idea, you have to point to some radical change that the industry is going to not look the same a year, 2 years, 3 years from now from the way it looks today. That's right. And then the second thing is, what you do has to be feel to the investor or the buyer hard. If it looks easy, right, they'll feel like A, they're at risk, or B, that somebody else, they'll look for somebody else who can do it. So unless they perceive that what, you know, adding CBD to seltzer water is hard, that's where my pitch for you would be like, hey, this is hard to get right for 1700 reasons, but I'm going to list the top 170 reasons here like an auctioneer. There's five, hard to add the CBD, chemical infusion, and it's illegal, and 1700 is sold. Okay. Now I'll slim that down to the top eight. But this has been tried by 100 different companies and they failed. They didn't put up enough money. They didn't understand the chemistry. They're not from this community. And, you know, basically Coca-Cola can't just announce, hey, we put CBD in seltzer water, and people in the real community, you know, who've had snowboarding, extreme sports, who've had trauma, are not buying Coca-Cola CBD, right? And so this is hard to do. Other people have tried it, right? And something dramatically is changing that you can you know, demonstrate, like the stadium seating. It's easy to understand. Anyway, that's my two thoughts.
Yeah, so good on all of that. And for listeners, take this example, applying it to your own lives, your own businesses, your ideas. And you know, I want to transition a little bit because I know you had this $10 million deal, how you sold this $10 million deal to one of the most powerful men in Russia.
Yeah.
And I imagine you probably took a few of, you know, bits of your own advice to some degree, at least wherever you were at that point when that happened. Can you give us a little context for that story? And I share it mostly because one of the big themes of the show is permission. And I find all of us through our stories, we create permission, or as I say, per my mission. And so, yeah, tell us a little bit about how that went down. And if you can, keep breaking it down from this conversation.
Well, it's a great story because when, you know, when you come from a place of wanting to help, so that was a medical deal. You know, we were doing a genetic software and testing that really helps people out. So for example, just really quick, you know, if you're going to have a child, IVF, you have to take a genetic test and then another genetic test. I mean, if you took every genetic test they prescribe, it can be hundreds of thousands of dollars. At some point you go, okay, well, we'll do sickle cell anemia, but we won't do, you know, West Congo, Nile, snake bite fever, right? And our child could have that, but we just can't afford more genetic tests. So this company ganged up all those genetic tests. Instead of $100,000, it was $300. So we thought we were doing good for people. So the problem is when you know, it's the same thing. When you're doing something good, you think like a billionaire should basically, he's got the money, you're doing good. That's an easy formula, right? Yeah. But what I find my experience with billionaires is if it's $11, they apply the same math. What's my ROI? How long is my money going to be out? How much time is this going to take me? You know, what's the internal rate of return? What's my exposure? What's the management team look like? What's the downside protection? For $11, right? Like I worked for a billionaire. The first day I was there, he's like, hey, we're going to go eat. I was in Beverly Hills. We're going to go eat Chinese food. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to secret underground billionaire Chinese food. Like my stomach is just like, and so we go down. I'd never been in his car. I was expecting it to be like, you know, a Maybach or Rolls Royce or Mercedes. And it's like a, you know, a 15-year-old Pontiac, you know, large car. And we get in and he's driving and he's, you know, in his 70s. And we start heading south out of Beverly Hills. I don't know if you know Beverly Hills at all, but
a little bit.
Past Wilshire, past Olympic, past Pico. And I'm like, what in the hell kind of secret billionaire Chinese restaurant can be south of Pico? And we pull into a strip mall and it's everything $2.99 Chinese food, right? And I started seeing inside the mentality. So So no matter what you have, they're going to apply the same entrepreneurial principles, whether it's $100 or $100 million, is just how they think. So anyway, I'm pitching this Russian billionaire, and Russians love genetics. So they're like the perfect investor, and that's how I got to them. You know, they're just into that. And so I'm explaining it, and he's asking me questions in perfect English, right? And so when I answer the question, right, and when my answer was good and it helped my side, he's like, oh, sorry, I don't understand, right? Oh, you explained the interpreter. I'm like, what is going on? Like, when it's convenient for you, your English is like perfect, right? When it's convenient for me to be confused, oh, need interpreter, you explain, not understanding, only Russian. You speak in Russian? No, I don't speak Russian. So these kinds of, you know, frames and these power plays really, you know, being in that moment taught me how you have to put things in front of people in the universal language of deals. And that's where I was going before. A deal in Spain is a deal in Montenegro, is a deal in Ukraine, is a deal in Russia, is a deal in Wisconsin, right? Because it's math. It's not, you know, it's the number. So when you look at the, like, if you remember the Matrix, you know, look at buildings, it was just numbers falling. That's the way when you walk in with your CBD, you know, coconut rub, Birkenstock, flower underwear, right? Or whatever it is, you know, not to be mean, you know, but when you walk in with your stuff, right? And they're just seeing numbers falling. They're not seeing the essence of it the way you are. One, now the element is that you are passionate and knowledgeable and have done the work. That's a number falling, right? Which is called downside protection. I have a real entrepreneur. So what I learned there is everything for real business, not going to your uncle and saying, hey, look, you know, I'm going to write the Bible backwards on toilet paper. Oh, great, honey. You know, that sounds terrific. You know, here's $100,000. Please leave my house, right? That's a different kind of, you know, proposal. You know, those are people who love you and want to support you and be involved with you no matter what it is. But when you're going to people and saying, hey, look, we're going to be in business together and we're going to get a return on capital, that's math.
Yeah.
And that's what I learned in these environments. And so maybe I'll just say something about this notion of pre-wired ideas. Mm-hmm. I was listening to NPR, as people in NCDs do. It's the only channel. You just flip the dial. It's like the Truman Show. Like, NPR, this is Cookie Monster. NPR, this is Terry Gross. this is NPR, like every station. Yeah, I'm trying to get K-Rock. Right? NPR. So I'm listening to it, and it's like The Hidden Brain or something like that, you know, one of their shows. And the guy's explaining, it's like a show on addiction and addictive substances and everything. And they're talking about cocaine. This is, you know, it's not really my substance. I don't know anything about it. But what he said is, like, most people think that you dump cocaine, you know, onto the human brain, and the brain goes, what the fuck is this? This is fucking amazing. Never seen this shit before in my life. Like, ah, you know, and it's this substance meeting the brain, and the brain goes bonkers for it because it's never seen. The reality is, there's pre-wired receptors for the chemicals in cocaine. You don't normally get those concentrations in regular, you know, like chocolate cake. You know, that's why people go fucking bonkers for chocolate cake, right? The same thing. But because never in nature would you see that concentration of energy and sugar, right? And your mind goes, oh, that could keep me alive for a week. You know how many blueberries I'd have to eat to equal one piece of chocolate cake, right? This is economically advantageous. And so there's these pre-wired receptors for cocaine, right? And they're just super saturating. That's what makes people go bonkers. So I thought, are there pre-wired receptors for ideas? Yeah. And in fact, I started looking at it. I don't have my list here, but there's, for example, like movies, there's 7 movie plots. And if your movie isn't in one of those plots, then you don't have a movie. I mean, you have The Lobster or some bullshit, you know, Cannes mm-hmm. Festival, you know, movie that some French people go to, but you don't have like a money-making movie. And it's man versus man, mm-hmm. man versus himself, man versus nature, you know, and there's 7 plots just like that. And that's it. You propose a plot that's not one of those. It's not pre-wired in the human mind, and it's not going to get funded as a real movie. So I started looking for these pre-wired ideas in the mind. And in fact, there are quite a few, and they boil down to 3. you know, and I put them in the book. So you got to take whatever it is you have and all its complexity and all its nuance and all its substance and creativity and everything like that, and just put it in a way that I would say that, like, the comparison, and you're a musician, rock and roll, right? You don't need, like, there, you know, you may have never heard of a band, Merciful Fate. I think they're like Finnish, right? You don't need like, it's just rock and roll. You don't need to, I love these English musicians, right? They're like, you're listening to them and they just sound like a regular musician and you don't know where the band is from and everything. And then you hear them like, roll up, mate. Really love to sing this music, I, right? Sounds like normal singing. So rock and roll hits these pre-wired music in the mind and you love it because of what it does to the brain. You don't have to explain it.
Yeah.
And so your ideas, you got to turn them into rock and roll so they enter the mind in a way that the, in a narrative or story that we're already wired to accept. And that first one is winter is coming. We understand that. If I say to you, hey, you're in Boulder, there's an early winter. All of a sudden, there's a million things you drop.
Yeah.
Right? And there's all kinds of things you have to do. That gets your attention. We're wired for environmental threats that change everything. Right? This is why the stories of, hey, there's alligators in the sewer. Right? Yeah. Click.
Yeah.
That goes into our mind as an environmental change. So environmental change, winter is coming. If you watch Game of Thrones, the whole fucking movie, have you seen any of these?
All the obsessed, but yes, okay. Yeah. Winter is coming, totally.
Yeah, cool. No what threat. They do is, you know, they have dwarfs, you know, with dragons, and this guy killed this guy's sister, and this guy's sister married the brother, and the brothers, and these guys, and it's no longer followable, right? And they're in all kinds of script trouble. And then they just go, winter is coming, right? And you're like, okay, you don't have to worry about the gay dwarfs, right? And the dragons, you know, they can do anything and nobody can defeat. Now, oh, winter is coming, you know, we need to find food.
Yeah.
And so, sorry. The winter is coming, right?
Yeah.
Another pre-wired idea, and this is a big thing for going back to your pitch, is skin in the game. Mm-hmm. When you go and you say, hey, investor, I have this idea. I have spent so far 1 hour and 19 cents on this, you know, like 1/70th of a latte, right? And I now have this idea and you need to put $1 million in. That doesn't make sense, mm-hmm. right? In a bigger context, like we do these deals where the entrepreneur will hold paper or be willing to wait for payment. The bank will finance the whole thing. So they don't need any money to do the deal, but the banks won't allow you to do a deal without money, even though you have it all organized, mm-hmm. right? And you don't need money. They make you put in money. Skin in the game. So the pre-wired yeah. notion is if there's no risk to you, it's not likely to work out. That's just wired into the human mind, okay? Yeah. The other one that I, you know, another one is you know, I put in the book 2X. If somebody doesn't feel like really you're going to double the value or the impact or the benefit of what's happening now. So if you said, hey, CBD and seltzer water, I'm not trying to be mean to you, right? But
I threw it out as the yeah. example. So it's
Yeah.
So, just for you listeners.
but I'm just trying to give you perspective, right? So you pitch it to me and you're passionate. I'm like, oh yeah, this chick kid just came in of a lovely company, CBD and seltzer water, or they're mixing Coke and marijuana leaves or whatever. Like it will get, unless you do the job of framing yeah. it up and making it in this pre-wired idea, then it will get minimized. It will get distorted. It will get reframed, you know, or misinterpreted. So the way people will pay attention to it is if you say, hey, look, this increases the recovery time in, you know, brain injured athletes from soccer to snowboarding to hockey to things your kids are in today by, you know, it can take 2 years of recovery into 6 months to 8 months. When it feels like you're doubling happiness, doubling results, doubling something that exists today, not it's a little bit better.
Yeah.
Then people pay attention to that because we want to change our behavior. We want outsized benefits. Mm-hmm. That's pre-wired because So anyway, I'm beating it to death, but if you put whatever it is you have into notions that already exist in the human mind, like maybe I could bring it home like this. You know, you ask people, hey, I'm very interested, nice to meet you. What do you do? Well, I'm a quality control analyst for security patches on Microsoft.net. Sorry, because there's throughout human history, that was never a job until a year ago. Right? Mm-hmm. If you say, I'm a musician. Oh, I fucking got it. You play music. Right? And then people cheer and you know, I'm a farmer. Oh, I know what you do. You're a farmer. So these are pre-wired in human history to be understood, right? There may be more programmers today than farmers, right? But we don't understand what a programmer is, but we do understand what a farmer is. So so those things are physically pre-wired into the human mind. It's important to access them.
Yeah, so good. Loving this conversation. For those that are tuning in, we're going to jump to the rapid fire round, and we've got an awesome giveaway, which is going to take this even another step forward. So, Oren, I've got three lightning questions coming at you in this rapid fire round. Are you ready?
I'm ready to go.
All right, question number one, fill in the blank. If you really knew me, you would know what?
I'm lucky to be alive.
Okay, podcast episode number two, upcoming attractions for that story. Okay, question number two. What is one practice that you do regularly that pushes your upper limits of what you believe for success, really keeps you reaching further when you hit these plateaus in your life?
Thrusters.
CrossFit. So good.
A thruster is a squat into a press. And it taxes everything from your toes to your eyebrows. It taxes everything. And so it's so taxing and you'll never get anywhere that it humbles you. And so humility is the answer.
Yeah. Love that. Last question. What does living the unconventional life mean to you in just a few words?
Yeah. For me, the unconventional life is, as for me, is very personal. Giving my son the childhood that I wanted.
So good. I love that. Oren, tell us about the giveaway that you've got for one of our listeners.
Yeah. So if you go, so first of all, submit your information or your email to Jules and she'll pick somebody through some illegal contest rules.
UnconventionalLifeShow.com, head there.
Unconventional. Hey, FTC, Jules is going to give away a book by actually just picking her favorite reader. Is that legal? No, so Jules is going to give you a book, okay? So submit your information to her. But if you go to orinclaff.com, put your name in. As I said to Jules earlier, I think the only other person who submitted their name was my mom. So it's either you or her are going to win this contest. I'm going to fly somebody out to Southern California, put you up in a hotel by my office, drive you around in any one of a dozen cool cars that I have, or we can just take an Uber if that's your thing, and work on your business with some of the things we talked about today. So that's at orinclaff.com.
Awesome. We will put all of those links on the website. Oren's new book, Flip the Script, just came out recently, getting people to think your idea is their idea. A lot of great stuff we covered today. Also, Pitch Anything as well, your other book in addition to that. So Oren, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with all of us. And for those that want to follow along your journey, stay in touch, what's the best way to do all of that with you?
Yeah, again, just go to orinclaff.com, put your name in, and I'll email you periodically. No spam, no buy this, and with an update of what's going on, and I'll send information that is, I always put out more value than I ever ask. So I'll give you information on how to do this stuff and we'll just stay in touch.
Perfect. Unconventional Lifers, thank you so much for tuning in. Oren, thank you once again for being on the show. It was such a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, everyone.